you. Good afternoon or good morning to those of you on the West, and welcome to the Talking Freight Seminar Series. My name is Jennifer Simone, and I'll be moderating today's seminar. Today's topic is the Crosstown Improvement Project, or CTIP. Please be advised that today's seminar is being recorded. Before I go any further, I do want to let those of you on the phone who are calling into the teleconference for the audio know that you do need to mute your computer speakers, or else you'll be hearing your audio over the computer as well. I also have a poll up. If you could please just respond if you prefer to access the telephone or the computer for the seminars, that would be helpful. Today we'll have five presenters: Randy Butler of the Federal Highway Administration Office of Freight Management and Operations, Ron Schaefer of SAIC, Paul Bellella of Delcan, Roger Schiller of Cambridge Systematics, and Ed McQuillan of RMI. And I don't know if any of our presenters are playing with the poll right now, but it's actually affecting it for everybody. So if we could just leave the poll on right now. Randy Butler joined the Federal Highway Administration in November of 2003 as a transportation specialist on the operation and technology team. Prior to joining Federal Highway, he completed a 35-year career in the private sector in managing freight transportation operations, engineering, customer service, business process reengineering, information systems, and project management. Randy currently is completing a Doctor of Business Administration in Global Supply Chain Management at Walden University. He also holds a project management professional certification from the Project Management Institute. Ron Schaefer is a senior transportation analyst in the Logistics and Engineering Business Unit at SAIC. He is the program manager for the FHWA Crosstown Improvement Project, the Electronic Freight Management Case Study Project, the Dynamic Mobility Application Open Source Portal Project, and the Smart Roadside Initiative. Prior to joining SAIC, he worked 27 years at Union Pacific Corporation in a variety of information technology management positions, including software development, R&D, emerging technologies, and business development. Paul Bellella has 24 years of experience spanning the areas of intermodal and truck-borne freight transportation to include specific expertise with vehicle and administrative technology systems, freight efficiency and operations analysis, freight security technology, freight planning, decision support systems, and web-based communications and transportation or transaction media. He currently manages Delcan's freight trade and international borders practice and is providing project management and technical support to the development and application of advanced vehicle and back office technology to enhance commercial freight security and efficiency, freight transportation planning and analysis, and the assessment and reengineering of operations to leverage advancements in information technology. Roger Schiller is an associate at Cambridge Systematics and is serving as a lead analyst in Cambridge's evaluation of the CTIP deployment in Kansas City, Missouri. Recent projects he has been involved with include the Chattanooga Volkswagen Plant Freight Impact Analysis and the West Coast Corridor Coalition Trade and Transportation Study. He is also assisting in the collection of truck GPS data in Southern California for improvements to Skag's heavy-duty truck model. Ed McQuillan is a senior transportation manager at RMI and is responsible for managing RMI's development of the CTIP Evaluation Performance Monitoring System. He has over 30 years of experience in freight and rail transportation and has a broad understanding of transportation network structures and strategies. His career in freight operations has included work for Hanjin Shipping and the Chicago and Northwestern Railway Company. He is a member of the Intermodal Association of North America and is also a member of the Intermodal Association of Chicago and the Intermodal Freight Technology Working Group. I'd now like to go over a few logistical details prior to starting today. Today's seminar will last 90 minutes, with 60 minutes for the speakers and the final 30 minutes for audience question and answer. If during the presentations you think of a question, you can type it into the chat area. Please make sure you send your question to everyone and indicate which presenter your question is for. The presenters will not be answering the questions during their presentations, but I'll start off the question and answer session with the questions typed into the chat box. Once we get through all the questions that have been typed in, for those of you on the phone, the operator will give instructions on how to ask a question over the phone. And if you think of a question after the seminar, you can send it to the presenters directly, or I encourage you to use the Freight Planning Listserv. If you haven't already joined the listserv, the web address is on the slide on the screen, and actually, once I take down the poll box, you'll be able to see it. Again, I'd like to remind you that the session is being recorded and a file containing the audio and the visual portion of the seminar will be posted to the Talking Freight website within the next few weeks. We encourage you to direct others in your office that may not have been able to attend to access the recording. The PowerPoint presentations used today are available for download from the file download box in the lower right corner of your screen. The presentations will also be available online within the next few weeks, and I'll notify all attendees of the availability of the PowerPoints, the recording, and a transcript. One final note, Talking Freight seminars are eligible for 1.5 certification maintenance credits for AICP members. In order to obtain credit for today's seminar, you must have logged in with your first and last name, or if you're attending with a group of people, please type your first and last name into the chat box. I've included more detailed instructions in the file share box on how to obtain your credits after the seminar. However, please note that today's seminar has not yet been approved by AICP. It should be within the next week or so, and I'll send a note out to everybody once it is available for credits. I also encourage everybody to download the evaluation form from the file share box and submit it to me after you've filled it out, as we're always looking for feedback on how to improve the seminars. So we'll now go ahead and get started. Today's topic again is the Crosstown Improvement Project, and our first presenter will be Randy Butler of the Federal Highway Administration Office of Freight Management and Operations. As a reminder, if you have questions, please type them into the chat box and they'll be answered after we get through all of the presentations. So with that, Randy, I'm going to turn it over to you.
Okay, thank you, Jennifer. Can you hear me okay?
Yep, sounds good.
All right, great, thank you. Thank you everyone for joining this afternoon and getting an update on the Crosstown Improvement Project. This is a project that we reviewed, I think, about a year ago on Talking Freight, and we are now at the point that we're actually starting implementation and at the same time starting evaluation. So what I'm going to do briefly is go over an overview of the project and turn it over to Ron and Paul, Roger and Ed to talk more specifically about some of the components and the evaluation of the project. This project has been basically in development for almost 5 years now. It was a concept that originated out of a group that meets, it used to meet semi-annually. But I'm briefly going to talk about, first of all, what the contents of this presentation is, and then we're going to go into, again, the specifics. First is the background of what really a Crosstown consists of, and what we have developed out of that is a problem statement that focuses on trip reduction. We're going to talk about potential locations of where this may be deployed in other areas and different types of modes. We're going to look at specifically at what our goal is and how we have been able to put together basically a public-private partnership working together to achieve these goals. The components, there's five specific components. I'll briefly introduce them and then I will let Ron and Paul talk more a little bit about the details of the components. I will briefly give you an operating scenario of how this would be planned to work. And then at the end of the presentation, I'm going to talk about where we're at from a status perspective and next steps. Also, the evaluation piece, we will go quickly into that at the end and talk about how we are measuring the results of the project. For those of you that are not familiar with what a crosstown is, it originated with a group called Intermodal Freight Technology Working Group, and this is a transportation stakeholder group focused specifically on improving productivity and public benefits through technology. This slide says we meet semi-annually. We've been meeting with the Intermodal Association of North America for the last 5 years. This next year we'll be moving into more of a regional concept where we'll be focusing on having meetings across the country in different locations to understand and listen to what some of the regional problems are and how they could be used in different areas of the country. From this group that meets and introduces new projects and reviews ongoing projects, one of the first accomplishments out of this group was do a business process model following a container as it originates in the U.S. and moves through the transportation network. And as we did the process map, and this process map took up about five rooms, it seemed like, as many activities that took place in it, we were able to identify in the processes associated with the transportation movement of container, basically coming off of a water carrier, onto a drayage company, onto a rail line, back to a drayage company, maybe to a distribution center, and then out of the distribution center. That 40% of the time of the movement was waiting for information exchanges between supply chain partners. From this, we were able to really focus our efforts on information sharing and information exchange between the partners and developing new technologies that would support that. The Crosstowns is a part of this process. Basically, when railroads originate shipments on the West Coast and interchange them, specifically, there's three interchange points that really focus on crosstowns. The main one is Chicago. There's also in Kansas City. There's some that go on in Missouri, in Kansas, St. Louis. But Memphis is another area where there's tremendous amount of crosstowns. What happens is, due to the short amount of time in the transportation movement, it's sometimes in order to get through between, say, the Union Pacific and the NS or the Burlington Northern and the CSX, there has to be a container taken off of a rail car and moved over the highway to the next rail terminal and reloaded on another rail car. And what we found in our study that these movements were actually taking place and there was no backhaul associated with it. So there was a bobtail movement for each movement that was taking place. In the Chicago area, we're looking sometimes at the neighborhood at the peak economic conditions of close to 20,000 of these type movements a day. So you can see what the problem was. If we could start coordinating some information between the terminals of what containers need to move back to another terminal, then we could eliminate a trip, thus saving productive time and also being able to reduce emissions. From that, we developed a problem statement that really focuses on both public and private benefits, on congestion, which is both a public and private benefit, efficiency of the transportation network, the safety to the motoring public, and the environment of neighboring communities, and energy consumption. These five areas really focused our next steps in developing what we considered areas that where we may be able to deploy this type of technology. As I mentioned, we were focused specifically on railroads, but as we looked at the operations of other types of container movement, rail to rail, port to rail, port to truck, and airport to truck, we saw the same type of operation inefficiencies and be able to apply the same type of concept to be able to reduce that empty trip. So our CTIP goal was to develop and deploy an information sharing transfer capability that enables the coordination of movements between parties to maximize loaded movements and minimize unproductive movements. The public-private partnership was focused on a goal trip reduction. And from that, we were looking at specific areas where we could apply these types of benefits. From the freight carrier perspective, from the supply chain, opening up competitiveness, and finally on the public benefit side. So all of these areas that were focused, if we were able to accomplish this goal, we would see results in these four different areas. The public-private partnership, even though this idea was really conceived to be beneficial to Chicago as being the main focus, we wanted to start with a project that was smaller in magnitude and would actually reduce the same results. So we worked very closely with a group in Kansas City, specifically as the USDOT in our office being the facilitator and convener. We worked with the railroads that were in Kansas City, Union Pacific, Burlington Northern, NS, and KCS. We've had some specific trucking companies we've been working with, Mid-Cities, Greer, ITS, and IXT. We've had the Missouri DOT and Kansas DOT heavily involved in it. And also the MPO, the Mid-America Regional Council, has been very cooperative in helping us with the project. We've also had the Economic Development Group, Kansas City Smartport, that's been very active in helping us pull this project together. And finally, the traffic management organization, KC Scout, which we're getting quite a bit of our traffic information from for one of our modules, has been very cooperative. So we've had all of these groups basically working together as a public-private partnership to achieve the goal. So I mentioned the CTIP components just real briefly, and then, like I said, I will let Ron and Paul take the detail to give you a good idea what the concepts. I look at the intermodal exchange, IMX, as really being the heart of the system. This is where everything flows to and from. It is the main focus of where we're using sharing information. We're developing some of the work that we've done in the past with our web services, service-oriented architecture to be able to support this exchange. The wireless drayage updating piece was actually a part that was contributed to us by the Federal Motor Carrier, and they had done previously an efficiency study that pointed out how wireless communications could be used to improve productivity. The utilization tracking, this project originally was conceived as being a project that would manage inventories within the chassis environment. Since our development, though, this has moved to a chassis pool organization, and that organization is cooperating with us to share information of what chassis could be moved to eliminate that trip that we were referring to earlier. And finally, the real-time traffic monitoring. This is where KC Scout and some of our other private data has been brought in to be able to focus on the improvements. And the dynamic route guidance, and this is the newest module that it really focuses on how we can improve in-route transit by giving the drivers information associated with routes that may have deteriorated with alternate routes to be able to make their delivery time. I'm going to quickly give you an operating scenario of how this may work, and just to get everybody familiar with what we're talking about, and then we'll get into more detail. To begin with, as I mentioned, the information has to be exchanged. So we bring the information. We have two rail terminals here that have sent information in that is focused specifically on the movements that have to be made between the terminals. From that point, that information is sent out to the drayage company that has to move it. We can send it directly to the dispatcher, or we can use the wireless drayage component that we've built to get the information out to the driver. Now, I want to emphasize at this point that design that we have put forward does not just include a driver distraction capability where we actually lock down information that can be sent to the driver if the truck is moving and they cannot use the device. And we'll go into that in more detail in a few minutes. The next step is the real-time traffic monitoring piece. Now we get information about the routes, what construction may be taking place, or is there any incidents in the route that may cause a problem in the traffic time. From that, the driver begins his journey to the first terminal. He's got his instructions and his work orders to pick up a container at this first railroad terminal. Again, and Paul will emphasize this dynamic routing piece in his presentation, but if there was any problems in the route, then he needed to be basically rerouted to another route that was more efficient. He would get that information through an audio file in transit. Once he's arrived at the terminal, he picks up that first container and he moves it to the second container. Now at this point, this is where we had identified the information sharing. Previously, that driver at that terminal would have basically returned either back to the location or where he originated at or to another location, basically as a bobtail. Now we have been able to coordinate the information between these rail terminals, indicating now there is a crosstown at Terminal 2 that needs to be delivered back to Terminal 1. So as that driver receives that information, and he can see receive it over his wireless when he's not moving, and returns back to Terminal 1 with the container to drop off. Now at this point, if there is no other information, we've taken another step is to start including information about local deliveries, deliveries to distribution center warehouses or directly to customers to take the could take the container and unload it. So we could actually merge that information in and give it to the drayage company so they could actually make a move from that rail terminal out to a specific industry or a distribution center, a warehouse, or whatever. So this is really the concept, is sharing that information, making it available, making the transportation connections between all of these different entities so that there is no mistrip or there is no bobtail that's moving without a container. And from this, I'm going to turn it over to Ron to really talk about the first few components, the IMX and the wireless drayage update and the chassis piece. And then we'll go to Paul and talk about real-time traffic monitoring and the dynamic route guidance. Ron?
Thank you, Randy. Ron, you can go ahead when you're ready.
It probably would help if I'd be off mute. Thanks, Randy and Jen. Again, welcome to everybody. What I'm going to do today is Randy did a real good overview of the functionality of CTIP, and Paul and I will drill down into more technical aspects of the each of the different components. Okay. As Randy mentioned, the goal is really to eliminate bobtail moves, and the components in which we're going to be able to do that is through the intermodal exchange, the IMX. That is really the core to the entire system. All data of all the components passes through the IMX module system. The second component is chassis utilization tracking. There, as Randy mentioned, the original plan was to maintain a chassis inventory. But since we started this project, chassis pool operators are now handling that in the Kansas City area, as well as other locations. So now what we're doing is we're getting files from the chassis pool operator. Essentially, what they're doing is giving us what moves, what repositioning needs to take place within the Kansas City area. The next component is the wireless drayage. And on the next slide, I'll show you essentially the architecture of the entire system. But when we think about WDU, just think of, you know, the iPhone, all the information that's being distributed to the truck driver and returning back to IMX is all done through the WDU component. The real-time traffic monitoring, that really has to deal with collecting all the information from the roadside sensors, KC Scout, and so on. Paul is going to get into a lot more detail on that, as well as the dynamic route guidance. So the next slide, not to scare everybody, but this is pretty much the architecture of CTIP. And if I can get my arrow working here. As I mentioned, the core of the system is IMX. As you can see, all the arrows in the entire architecture system is everything's pointing to and from the IMX database there. The architecture I want to mention is actually based on a previous project called Electronic Freight Management. Actually, there's several case studies going on right now. It is a service-oriented architecture using web services. This entire application is built on that architecture, and it's working very well. So at CTIP, you see the next application is the CUT, upper left-hand corner. Hopefully you can see the little green arrow there. That's where we're collecting the chassis pool information, where we're getting, as you can see here on some of these arrows, you can see the different messages that are being transmitted between the different applications. We are getting a file from the chassis pool operators that essentially is telling us what chassis need to be repositioned at the various terminals, and it could be anywhere from any of the rail terminals in Kansas City. It can also be the container yard. Or even picked up in industry. So it's a variety of locations. So we're getting that information fed in through the chassis pool operator. The railroads, they are providing us essentially the information of all the containers that are going to be offloaded from the train, you know, throughout the day, that are going to need those, which containers are going to be need to be crosstown to another railroad. As Randy mentioned, we're essentially dealing with the Union Pacific, the NSF, and the Norfolk Southern Railroads in Kansas City. that information is being fed into and out of the IMAX application. The Crosstown Trucking Company is there. That information that each trucking company can actually put into the IMAX system, what their capacity is. In other words, if they have typically on five trucks available 5 days a week, maybe on Saturday they only have maybe two trucks available, they can put that into the system so that we can determine what their availability is for any type of truck moves for that given day. Also, you can see there, I keep losing my arrow. Also, you can see the pending assignments, trip assignments, trip status is all coming from IMAX to the trucking companies. And then the industry moves. Jennifer, for some reason, this arrow is not staying there.
Yeah, sometimes it can be temperamental. I don't know what's going on there. Just make sure you're holding your mouse down the whole time, but okay. I'm not sure why it's not working.
That's not working either. Okay, so anyway, quickly see the green arrow there pointing to IXC and Lake Country. What we're getting information from those trucking companies includes the industry moves. If you remember Randy's scenario went through, he was describing what across town, what was going on with across town. You had potential chassis move, and you also had also industry moves. And as he was going through his scenario, it was showing, you know, what the truck driver was doing between each of those different terminals or nodes. And that's all being controlled through the optimization program that's being run in IMAX, in the IMAX system. So the way we are able to reduce bobtails, reduce those empty moves, is through optimization. So all of the data feeds that I've talked about, through COT, IMAX, from the industry, you know, from the trucking companies, all that information is run through an optimization, the dynamic optimization program that runs, essentially allows each of the truck drivers to receive a work order. In other words, it'll go through and describe for them what their day is going to look like as far as what moves they need to make from, you know, from point A to point B, from B to C, and so on. So that's what IMAX is doing. We're optimizing that information for the truck drivers. Now, Paul is going to talk about this, but the RTTM and RTTM component really is made up of the real-time traffic information as well as the dynamic routing. All that information also is pushed out to the truck driver via the iPhone. The iPhone, now I'm up in the upper right-hand quadrant where it has WDU. We are using a phone gateway. It's a product from Favni. It allows you to essentially write applications to any type of smartphone. We targeted the iPhone because it'll allow us to lock the phone when the truck is moving so the truck driver can't use it, although we can continue to display information to him. But this gateway product will allow us to move quickly from the iPhone to the Droid or similar to any other type of smartphone. You can see the information there as far as the information being sent from the iPhone back through gateway and eventually to IMAX, and then you can see the information, the work orders, traffic information, and the dynamic route or alternate route is being sent from IMAX or actually from RTTM, DRG through IMAX back to the phone. So this is the architecture. There's a lot of information being passed between all the different components. Again, IMAX is the core of the entire system, and of course the iPhone providing that as a capability to the information to the truck driver. So moving on, I'm going to quickly go through, just show you some screenshots of what the system looks like. From the railroad's perspective, what they'll be able to do is view any daily inbound and outbound crosstown moves that's displayed on the screen for them, and then they will have they can view then the optimized plan for any day, any movements of containers between the rail terminals. And then what they'll do is they'll assign the container to a particular drayage carrier. And this is probably a little bit hard to see, but at the lower part of that screenshot, hopefully here you can see the green arrow, you'll see at the bottom there, based on all this information that we received, the optimization that we did shows that there was actually five moves that were coordinated that would have saved five bobtails from being shows with the trip assignments, and this is where the rail carrier, once they know that they have a box, a container that needs to be moved, what they do is they assign it to one of the different, there's only two dray carriers in Kansas City that are being used right now, but the railroad will assign that move to a to the truck carrier. So for the motor carrier, what he's looking at is essentially all the containers that were assigned by the railroads that were assigned to them. They'll view that on their, actually they can look at it in the off the server, off the system, or they'll be able to look at it on their iPhone, or the driver will. They'll look at their optimized plan for the day. They'll be able to accept or reject any moves. They can assign the move to a driver who's going to receive their work order on the iPhone, and they can also look at the current traffic conditions. This is what the motor carrier, assuming he's, say, sitting in an office, this is the information he would see there as far as what moves have been assigned to him and whether or not he's accepted those moves. Administrative functions, real quick, the railroads would be, they would manage their terminal profiles. In other words, they'll put in what the transit time information, what dray carriers are using, what rail terminals they have available. On the motor carrier side, they would put in what capacity they have on any given day, and then also they can put in any temporary capacity. Like I said, if they had five trucks on any given day, but say one day they may have twice as many trucks, they can put that in there, which all becomes a part of the optimization program that I mentioned earlier. They can go in and manage user profiles, and then of course the various terminal information can be provided, updated in the system as well. It's very, very flexible. This, again, I apologize, you can't see too well, but you can see in this particular column here, it shows all the various moves that have taken place between each of the rail terminals. And then on the next screen, what we've done is we show what the total move summary is. And this shows the total moves that have taken place, the number that were empty. And this number 5 here at the top shows that this is how many bobtails were eliminated because of using the CTIP application. So now I'm going to show you what the iPhone application looks like. We would set up for each of the drivers the device ID. This will essentially say that this particular truck driver has this device in his truck. The next screen will show the status profile. On this here, these are the different statuses that the truck driver can, that we would set up on the phone for the truck driver. The statuses would include the in-gate loading, whether or not he's heading out of the out-gate, and also whether or not he's unloading. We can add, on the right side here, just shows you that we can add more statuses. That's just what we need for CTIP. The route profiles, these are the ones that we've set up for CTIP in Kansas City. You can see there on the left-hand side, the BNSF to NS, NS to UP, NS to Walmart distribution center. And on the right-hand side, it shows you how we can key in additional routes. The work order, this is where the truck driver would, let me get my arrow here again, he would request all the work orders that have been essentially generated from IMAX. He then would have the option to view those work orders and then send any trip status information back to IMAX. And the right-hand side there just shows that all the work orders were downloaded successfully from IMAX to his iPhone. And if you would want to look at any particular work orders for the day, you can see on the left-hand side here this EIS work order is the one that we selected. The right-hand side shows what, essentially all the information he needs to go pick up that container. Send status, this is showing a load. In other words, he's picked up the load, he's entered that information into the iPhone, and that information is sent back to IMAX for processing. For traffic information, this is where they can receive any real-time traffic information directly to the iPhone. This just shows that we're collecting GPS information, and we're pulling it every 30 seconds right now on the iPhone. If we want to select a particular route to figure out what the exact travel time is, they would select the route. some reason, you can see here on the left-hand side, that there is a, the primary route and alternate route, essentially for this particular route is the same amount of time right now. But if for some reason the alternate was the one that was selected because of an incident, whatever, on the primary route, then the alternate route would show up on the right-hand side as you see it there with all the instructions. And there also are audio files that are provided on the iPhone as well that would announce essentially what this what either the primary or alternate route is. And okay, I guess that's my last slide. Yeah.
It looks like that's it.
Okay, sorry. One more slide. But anyway, so that's the application, kind of the architecture, and the little demonstration of what the system looks like. And now I'll turn it over to Paul, who's going to talk more specifically about the RTTM and DRG component.
Paul, we'll turn it over to you next. And I just want to remind everybody, if you do have questions, please type them in the chat area. So Paul, you can go ahead.
Thanks, Jen. Thanks also to Ron and Randy. We've been doing this roadshow for quite a while, and it's still some pretty interesting stuff. So every time I see it, I think of different things that go through my mind that hopefully we can bring out during the discussion today. I'm going to share with you a bit more detail about the real-time traffic monitoring and dynamic route guidance components, as Ron mentioned. Basically, I'll give you a really quick overview of the concept itself. I'll break it out a little bit into each of the two components, show you kind of what the functional layout of the components are at a slightly greater level of detail than what Ron showed, and then I'll kind of let you see how it's intended to work and how it appears to be working since we are in the process of testing everything out for deployment. And then I'll share with you some closing thoughts about some things that are very important to make applications like this successful. The real primary point behind RTTM and DRG combined as a group of services is to make tailored information about traffic on the roadways and travel times that result from the traffic available to motor carriers to address some of the goals that Randy mentioned earlier, specifically to reduce delay and to mitigate congestion on the roadways. Major components, as you saw in Ron's schematic, were the RTTM module and the DRG module. Designing, developing, and implementing those in Kansas City are really what our primary role in this project is. As Ron's diagram showed you, that there are two of several components, and I think one of the things that, as we've kind of been working down at the detail level on this, that we tend to lose sight of is that we're often asked questions about, well, can't you just buy an off-the-shelf navigation device to do what you're doing? Well, you can to do certain things. I think the real beauty and consequently the real power in what we're doing here is in the way that we are developing and deploying these solutions on a service-oriented architecture with open standards and having each of these components so fully integrated with each other, yet able to stand alone in many ways, that we're really, I think, offering up an entirely new way of offering services to the freight community that allows them to layer in capabilities and functionality as they see fit for their operation. And as you can see from what Ron presented in some of the previous slides, the ability to go from accepting a load to finding out what the traffic is on that route without having to go through and enter in origins and destinations, all those sorts of things, and to know that the information that comes back to you has been vetted so that you're not going to be sent down a road that's not appropriate for a truck to travel on, and that the travel time information that you're getting is not only information about what current travel times are, but what those times are predicted to be into the future by the time a truck is likely to get to some downstream point. These are all very useful sorts of capabilities to provide. So we're excited about it. As Randy said, we've been at this for a while. Randy and I go way back on this since 2004. So at times it's good to refocus back on what we're really trying to accomplish here. At a very, very high level, Ron mentioned that we're using an iPhone. For the RTTM and DRG systems to function properly, the iPhone is really kind of a focal point for our services. It provides information to RTTM and DRG that's critical for delivering the functionality. It also provides, obviously, a mechanism for relaying information back to a driver. One of the things that was talked about very early on in this project was the need to keep the cost of access. In other words, the ability to become a subscriber or user of the system, to keep it absolutely as low as possible. So the idea of using a smartphone with some relatively straightforward and simple applications resident on that phone would help to make this solution more accessible to the kinds of motor carriers that tend to operate in the intermodal environment. The crosstown environment is similar in many ways to a port environment, in that you have a lot of owner-operators, a lot of drayage operations, very small numbers of trucks in their fleets, very low technology budgets, and a commensurate level of limitations on the technology capabilities within the company. So the smartphone offered a great option because you have a built-in privately funded and operated communications network, the cellular network, and you just have to simply define a way to communicate with this phone, extract information from it, and deliver information to it about what's happening on the roadway so that you can make an effective use of the technology and control the price so that it's accessible to the maximum number of folks as possible. With that being said, very quickly, the RTTM component of this, they are separated, and they're separated for good reason. I'll just talk about the RTTM first. It has several components of it. In addition to providing the database for all the traffic-related information that gets collected and distributed, it does several other things. First, it's the telemetry processor. We get information from the iPhone. We get location in terms of latitude and longitude. We get heading, and we get speed passed along to us from the phone every 30 seconds. What that allows us to do is it allows us to locate the trucks on the route that are of interest during the project. And it helps us at some point in the future when hopefully the number of phones really starts to multiply, the number of users really multiplies. It could also provide a significant bump in the volume and quality of information about the actual traffic on the roadway network. The numbers of phones in this test are very small, so we're not relying on them to supplement our roadway network information, our travel time information, or our travel speed information, but that's a distinct possibility and something that would add another layer of value to this set of applications should the deployment expand to the level necessary to make that happen. RTTM also includes traffic interfaces. We do receive traffic information from KC Scout, and we just recently got a feed turned on from NavTech. This basically consists of point speed data. We take that point speed data for the roadways that we're covering for the project, and we calculate link speeds and travel times. Link speeds just are the average speed on a certain segment of roadway defined as a link, and then the travel time is summing time it would take to traverse all the links between an origin and a destination for a vehicle. A traffic report generator is the next major component where we formulate trip-specific travel time reports. You saw from Ron's presentation that a driver can choose an origin-destination pair. Well, that's how we calculate travel time reports. We take an origin-destination pair, we look at a primary route that the carrier has identified between those points, and then we look at several other alternate routes that are viable routes for trucks to use, and we use that to calculate current travel time calculations within RTTM. We'll talk about what DRG does to supplement that here in a minute. And then finally, the IMX WDU interface We receive requests from the wireless device through IMEX. We process those and send information back out through IMEX for distribution back out to the trucks. So it's several components. There are four major component areas that that constitute RTTM. DRG, the idea behind this is to extend that functionality that is inherent in RTTM and provide navigation information to trucks that looks at predictive travel time information. So in other words, instead of just saying, well, we looked at this route and right now adding up all the travel times for all the segments is going to take 20 minutes, RTTM uses probabilistic calculations to determine what that route travel time is likely to do over the course of that trip. So if it's normally a 20-minute trip, then our DRG looks ahead in the trip and says, okay, when a truck reaches this link, what's the travel time on that link likely to be based on a combination of historical data that's been built up over time and current information that's available from NavTech and KC Scout. So one of the real challenges here is with DRG is it takes some time to build up that historical information, but the idea is that using that approach, we should be able to determine the best route from the location to destination that offers the carrier a safe passage, meaning the roads are appropriate for trucks to travel on, that'll get them there as quickly as possible. And again, going back to what we said earlier, the fact that this is fully integrated with the other operations within CTIP is one of the things that really helps to expand its value. Real quickly, a functional layout. This basically just puts in pictures what I've mentioned. You'll see that in the center, you have the RTTM and DRG applications. You have the WDU application, which offers an interface to the fleet, the trucks that are out there. So we can send information to them and get information from them. We're getting traffic data from the third party directly into the application here. In this case, NavTech. And then I see your problem with the arrow, Ron. The traffic management center, in this case, KC Scout. But these are all relatively generic components. The idea behind all of this is that we're using standard ITS terminology. We're using Transportation Management Data Dictionary, TMDD standards. We're using service-oriented architecture, web services, all the sorts of things that Ron has talked about. We're applying the same principles across the board so that we can connect all these various sources of information. And the idea being that if in some point in the future that there's a different third party that's more equipped to offer data for a certain geographic location, you can use them too. Same interface, all the design points are fixed. So how does it operate? At a very basic level, what you're seeing on your screen, what I hope you see on your screen right now, is a Google Maps version of an overview of the Kansas City area. And what you see on, and I'm hoping the animation works here, we'll see. That's not what I wanted to do. Let's see here. I hit the arrow. Here we go. Here comes the truck in. At origin, which is point A in this diagram, as Ron showed you, the driver can enter his destination and request traveler information. At that point, RTTM and DRG, in combination, execute their trip calculations for the primary route and the alternate routes that are labeled on this diagram. So the blue route is the primary route. The red route is alternate route number one, and the yellow route is alternate route number two. So it does calculations for all three of these routes, and then it offers advice back to the phone about which route will offer the shortest trip in terms of travel time. Now, the system is set up now for this purpose. So one of the other distinctions between this system and potentially off-the-shelf systems is that you can customize that. Let's say you're a carrier and you're more concerned, you know, fuel's back up at $5 a gallon. You're more concerned about the total fuel cost of a trip than the total time of a trip. You can, using this system, you could do those sorts of calculations and set it up so that you have the best fuel economy trip as your goal. Or you can set it up let's say that the most important thing for you is meeting a train cutoff time because this is a late pickup. The system could be configured. It's not now, but it could be configured to tell you the odds of each route getting you to the cutoff time before it arrives, so that you don't end up having to take that load, that container, and store it somewhere temporarily until you can deliver it to the next day. So they get the information at the origin. The next step in the process is the truck starts on its trip, and as it comes within a three mile radius of a decision point, and a decision point is simply, it's an opportunity point for a reroute. It's there are several of them for each route. The idea here is it's a logical and likely beneficial alternate route for that truck to take. As we're receiving the information from the phone, RTTM and DRG, RTTM is calculating position in relation to the next decision point. So within 3 miles of the decision point, we call it on here a reroute point, the device requests travel information. At that point, RTTM and DRG again execute the trip calculation and return one of two responses. The default response is to remain on the present route. That means the present route, the primary route in this case, remains the best route between the origin and the destination. The alternate would be an audio file displayed that says CTEP has determined that there is a faster route to your destination, and then it'll give him an abbreviated list of roadways that he would take. So it may say at this decision point on the map, what you're seeing is the vehicle headed northbound on I-29. Coming up to that decision point, he would be told to divert onto, I believe that's I-35, and proceed to I-435 north, and then basically would resume his route, but would continue to get audio directions when it gets to the point where the red route intersects with the blue route again near Randolph. So he would be given voice guidance for the remainder of the route at any decision point, any remaining decision point. Now, in this case, there aren't any additional downstream decision points from this first point here. And it's important to note, and I believe Randy or Ron mentioned it, that the audio direction was derived because, was used because FMCSA, which provides the funding for the wireless drayage updating component, obviously is very sensitive to driver distraction issues, and it was determined that an audio file would be far less distracting than a map display on a relatively small phone screen. So with that being said, then throughout the process, as the truck continues its trip, the device continues to report. It reports every 30 seconds a location, a heading, and a speed for that device. Okay, for our purposes, it really doesn't matter which truck it's in. The device is going to be going from point A to point B, and as long as we can keep track of that device and know where it is, we can continue to evaluate the route as it goes. Each 30-second report is actually a request for updated information. We won't play that audio file unless it's coming up on a decision point. We won't play the stay on present route audio file unless it's coming up on a decision point. And as was mentioned earlier, the visual display is locked out. The driver cannot interact with it as the vehicle is moving. So that's generally the relatively simplified overview of the actual operation of RTTM and DRG. Ron had a spaghetti chart, so I felt I had to give you one too. The only thing that I really want to point out here is that what I talked about earlier, this project is really about interconnectivity, using open standards to give access to information to as many people as possible, using one architecture and one set of technical standards. So what you see here is just simply all the stakeholders in the Kansas City area and how they're connected to each other and to the system, all using these sorts of open architecture and these sorts of standards. So just a couple of slides to wrap up here then. Really, there's some real important factors to keep in mind that are going to drive the success of this project and the success of actually any project that seeks to do what we're trying to do here. You really have to have the right data. If you don't have the right data and enough of it, and it's not accurate, then all the things we're trying to do in terms of determining travel time, really are just gonna fall flat. The quality of what goes in absolutely drives the quality of what comes out. Packaging the data into useful information. The idea we try to adhere to here is to make sure that we're providing information that can be quickly interpreted and confidently acted upon during the course of operation. And then making information available when it is needed and where it is needed, making sure it's timely and that they can make decisions quickly when they get the information. They don't have to try to do extra levels of processing once they receive the information. Some things that are particularly important for DRG, we already mentioned accurate data and timely data. These are really critical to DRGs. To be able to do predictive travel time calculations, these are absolutely essential, along with, what, as I mentioned before, reliable historical data, which we're trying to build up now. And hopefully, as what I anticipate will happen is that as over the course of the test, the data collection period, and evaluation period, the quality of the DRG output will continually improve as that historical database builds. Rapid alternatives calculations, again, it's a timeliness issue. And then the accommodation for roadway limits, restricted routes, geometric constraints, clearances, I mentioned all those things. It's really critical, and we've adopted this posture from the start, that we have to absolutely make sure that safety is not compromised in any way, shape, or form as a result of implementing and using the system. So the significant challenge that we have moving ahead, and I'll wrap up here, is validating that DRG output. It's one of the big challenges we have is how do you validate the accuracy of travel time on a route that you didn't take. That's something that we're, and I know the evaluators are trying to come up with a creative way of doing that too. DRG says that an alternate route is 10 minutes, or you know, is 5 minutes faster or 10 minutes faster, and a driver opts to stay on the primary route. How do you know that it wasn't right, or how do you know that it was right? Providing usable output to the drivers. Again, we have these audio files. We're not necessarily convinced long term that that's going to be the best way to do it, but we've got to figure out, we're going to learn over time some things about that. Accommodating human behavior variables. I mentioned drivers deciding not to take that route to begin with. One of the things we've already figured out here is that the logical primary route for one of the origin destination pairs that we're looking at is actually a route that the carrier says is not their primary route, despite the fact that it consistently shows a shorter travel time. So that's one of the things that over time, as this thing migrates, hopefully toward a deployed solution, that we can sort through how to deal with some of those things. And then finally, getting the truckers to trust the DRG recommendations. If you're working with a driver who's been operating in this environment for 10 years, 15 years, getting him to trust a device telling him that the route he's come to know and trust over all those years is not as good as a different route that he doesn't know as well, and that's a pretty tall barrier to climb, but we're hoping that we can accomplish that. With that, I'll close and appreciate the opportunity to once again share what we're doing here, and be happy to answer questions at the end with everybody else. Thanks, Jen.
Thank you, Paul. And we will have the contact information for everybody up at the end. Right now, I'm going to turn it back over to Randy Butler, who's going to introduce the next portion of our presentation.
Okay. Thank you, Jen. What I'd like to, in presenting the evaluation piece, this is a new methodology that we are experiencing with this project to bring it so we can get real-time evaluation information as the project progresses. Traditionally, evaluation programs are done towards the end of the project where there's a large amount of data that has to be sifted through to come up with the results. The evaluation for this project, we're using a software called Vantage, which actually sits on top of the IMAX exchange in it has a specific group of metrics that have been developed for the project. So as the project is tested and information is exchanged and actual work is done, it's recorded and those results are basically displayed in a dashboard to us. So I'm going to ask Roger to introduce it, and then Ed will follow up with some specific examples of how we're using this. Roger?
Thanks, Randy. I'm just going to talk a little bit about, what are the evaluation goals, and then get into the methodology for how we're measuring these things. First of all, the overall goal is we're trying to measure both the public and private sector benefits associated with CTIP. From a public perspective, we're interested in measuring how many truck trips can be eliminated by the system. Presumably, if you're getting trucks off of the road, there's going to be some operational improvements for the rest of the transportation network in terms of travel times and congestion and things like that. So we'd like to get a sense of what those are. And then we also want to find out if the amount of any emissions reduction associated with these eliminated truck trips or with improving the operational characteristics of these drayage moves. From a private sector point of view, rationalizing these cross-town moves and avoiding congestion and reducing travel time, all that carries some improved efficiency aspects that we'd also be interested in quantifying. So here's my own spaghetti chart, but this is the overall approach for the evaluation portion. We're pretty much done with planning phase, which is task two. We've developed the metrics. We have an idea of what we're trying to measure. RMI is putting the finishing touches on the performance monitoring system. Then we're going to move into the baseline data phase, where we're going to be getting the data feeds from SAIC to RMI. And that's going to feed into the Vantage system and provide us with an archive of data. Probably daily email reports. And then from there, we're going to move into the actual deployment test phase to see what the difference between having CTIP and not having it was. These are the performance metrics that we're trying to measure. One thing that we're interested in is the number of trips in load versus bobtail status. This goes back to the maximizing the productive moves and minimizing unproductive ones. Travel times between these different crosstown terminals in both loaded and bobtail configurations. We also want to know about what's the terminal dwell time, how much time are these trucks spending awaiting information processing within the terminal. Delay times in traffic due to either congestion or accidents or whatever. And then emissions for those four items that I just described. We also want to calculate what those are. CTIP IMEX is issuing work orders, and we'd like to get an idea of what level of compliance is occurring with the truckers. Are they accepting what IMEX is recommending to do, or are they not? If not, why? Things like that. And then if there's any travel time savings associated with the real-time traffic management, the dynamic group guidance, we'd like to get a sense of what that is. So just kind of briefly, our overall methodology, we're identifying the crosstowns using data feeds that the railroads are providing through their systems. And then we're going to make some assumptions to identify what are the bobtail trips. Basically, we're getting gate move information from railroads. And if a truck in-gates at a certain time, then doesn't out-gate within a specified number of amount of time, we can reasonably deduce that that was a bobtail because the railroads don't track bobtails, but the truck had to have left at some point. Time savings is just a simple calculation of what is the typical route travel time and subtract the CTIP recommended travel time to arrive at what the potential time savings are. And then we have some EPA factors specific to the Kansas City area that we got from the EPA Moves model. They're based on distance and speed, and they're measured in grams per mile. We also have an idle factor in grams per hour, so we can identify any idling you know, two equipment. And with that, I guess I'll pass it along to Ed, and he's going to talk a little bit more about the Vantage system.
Okay, great. Thank you, Roger. And I'll jump right into this. Actually, Randy talked a little bit about Vantage, and Roger alluded to it as well. One thing I would say, what is Vantage? Vantage is a business intelligence tool. It's different than other business intelligence tools because it doesn't just run a query against your data. It also pushes data out to the user. So the user, either without intervention or maybe just with an open dashboard view, that dashboard will be continuously updated with new information without the user actually refreshing it. And where that's important is that as things occur and are reported into your database system, the information is really any change in your database. A trigger sends that information out to an open query or to a even an unopened query, and you can have immediate update of that information through an alert or through a refresh of your view without asking for it. And so that's you know, that's sort of one of the unique things about Vantage. It pushes data out to the user. Why was Vantage chosen for this project? Well, Vantage has both the ability to provide the evaluation side, and it can also actually assist in the operation and the plan execution here because of its immediate alerting capability. In addition to that, one probably valuable feature of RMI, my company being involved in this, is that we also do the terminal management software for both the UP, the BNSF, and within a couple of weeks we'll do it for the KCS as well. So we actually have access to the data for a lot of these gate moves. I pretty much mentioned the key features. It's an easy to use tool so that you know, the people that are using Vantage to perform the evaluation don't have to go through a real lengthy process to learn how to use it. And in addition to that, like in the last point, Vantage can actually transmit information out to non-users as well. Through the alerts can go out to non-users, like the trucking companies that are involved in CTIP, or to the railroads or other external parties that that may have some need to know about the availability of crosstown. Roger already kind of went through a pretty a clear list of what we're trying to measure. And one of the things that, you know, is the reason for using the Vantage tool is that the crosstowns and the bobtails are not necessarily readily available or identifiable within the railroad system. When a container leaves the gate and a trucker pulls out of a terminal, it's not clearly identified in most cases that that terminal, he's leaving Terminal A for the purpose of delivering this to Terminal B. The driver knows that information, but it's not actually part of the gate record. And so what Vantage is doing is matching the gate records from Terminal A and then from Terminal B, which now are being received into the IMEX database. And Vantage will also be used to look at the route compliance and the travel time compliance and comparisons that are part of the dynamic routing guidance and the real-time traffic monitoring. And then, as well as that, we can build calculations into Vantage, which will allow us to make use of the number of trips and the travel time to deduce the emissions factors and the emissions benefits from the system. This is an example of what the Vantage dashboard looks like, and actually what the Vantage tool looks like. The panel on the left is what a user would use to navigate between the dashboards, the tables and charts as it shows there, and that's where the queries are written and that will go against the IMEX database. And then the derived metrics portion is where the user would actually take the results of a query and do calculations with it. And those calculations could be percentages, they could be multiplications that are using factors for different emissions issues. On any one of these gauges that you see there, the user can actually click on that gauge and drill down to get the detailed information behind that. So what we show on the right hand, upper right hand side, we show 11 actual crosstown matches. If I wanted to see what those 11 were, when they occurred, or the detail behind them, I can click on that gauge and it'll bring up the detail for those 11 particular ones. And then the other thing too is that as the information changes in the database, the total number of moves changes as each one goes out the gate. This gauge will actually keep changing as each new move is recorded. And that might not be so valuable if you're talking about the total number of moves. It doesn't really matter whether it's 1,233 or 1,234 or 1,235. But some of the information on a gauge could be very critical, and we can build in thresholds that will also attach alerts to those. And this particular dashboard shows some of those types of situations. In this particular case, we're measuring the route compliance for six different lanes that have been identified within the CTIP project, showing the total number of moves in each one of those lanes, and also showing the percentage of times that the driver complied with the particular route information that he was receiving, whether it was to use the primary route or to use an alternate route. And the gauge is, if this were an open dashboard that the user had up on their desktop, and you see that some of the gauges are in red because they've fallen into fallen past a threshold that identified that as a very critical area. Some of the gauges are in yellow. The percentage number is listed in yellow. Likewise, there's a set of parameters that identify this as a sort of a warning status. And as the gauge falls into that, it will not just turn to the yellow or turn to red, but it'll also be flashing. So it highlights the visibility for the user, and they'll be able to see immediately that some situation has taken place. And for example, where this is critical is that, say, on lane 3, where the total trips are 63, I think, but we're getting a very low percentage of compliance. On a daily basis, maybe a user wants to see what's happening on a particular route, and if there's a lack of compliance on that particular route, we want to find out immediately what the reason is that, for that is. Are the drivers not familiar with the route? Is there something not valid about what we've assigned as the primary routes or the alternate routes? Or is there something else occurring that maybe we're not seeing within the other data that we have in the system? So it's going to highlight it to us and give us that immediate visibility. Now, that type of alert could also be sent to an email address or to a cell phone. If you want to alert someone that is not actually looking at a dashboard, they'd have that capability to still be advised of this particular alert. This is kind of a busy dashboard, but basically what we're showing here is that what we're saying is the emissions reduction in these same six lanes based on the number of trips. And then using the number of trips and the travel time times the particular factors that we've put into the formulas, and it's resulting in each one of the results for particular matter, for criteria pollutants and for greenhouse gases. So we can continuously keep track of the emissions reductions by means of these dashboards. The information can all be also shown in Excel spreadsheets. It doesn't have to be in the graphical view like this. And there's a whole variety of different types of tables. These are sort of summary graphs, but you could have a bar chart, you could have a pie chart, you could have the actual data showing as an Excel spreadsheet, whether here or you could save it into, and that's what we're doing. We're also saving that information into archive so that we can do analysis against that as well. That is pretty much it.
Okay, well, thank you. I'm going to turn it back to Randy Butler to close out with the presentation for today. And Randy, I'll bring your presentation back up.
Okay. First, I'd like to thank the presenters today. They've done an outstanding job of really displaying the work we've been doing the last 5 years. It's all come together. We're in the process of turning it on here in the next couple of weeks, and I'll walk through that steps in a few minutes. I did want to mention also that part of this process in pulling this project together was securing the funding to be able to do it. And we were able to actually use 7 sources of funding that originated specifically with the Mid-America Regional Council helped us out with Missouri DOT and the Kansas DOT on the RTTM side. The Federal Motor Carrier participated in the wireless drayage update by giving us funds to help that. We've had some initial development that was done under a previous contract with TSA, and that was moved to the Turner Fairbanks Exploratory Advanced Research Program. So it's been, in our office has also contributed funds to make this project happen. So we had to pull these different groups of funding together in order to make it happen. And I'm very excited about the upcoming events that will be happening over the next couple of weeks. What we're going to be doing is we've already started doing some load matching optimization that began back this June the 20th, and some of the numbers that Ed was just showing you are from that optimization. We started working on the installation and training of the wireless devices back in October. We want to run the test all the way through April of next year, 2011. And during that test, we'll be using the Vantage software to monitor the performance. And it'll give us a good idea, are we achieving the results, and what kind of tweaks do we need to make as we progress through the test. Hopefully we should be issuing a final report, which Cambridge Systematic is the evaluator, by mid-summer of next year. And quickly, where do we go from here? We've been working diligently to get this test going. One of the biggest next steps that we have is continually understanding what the requirements are to improve upon the work we've already done. We've gone back and we're using the Intermodal Technology, Freight Technology Working Group to do that. And also we're going back constantly to the Kansas City pilot participants to get their feedback. We're going to be looking at where we can deploy this. And our greatest opportunity is now in the IntelliDrive area of the dynamic mobility applications that has become a part of the IntelliDrive process. So we'll be working to basically incorporate some of the ideas we've already developed in dynamic route guidance, some of the things we're doing in drayage optimization, more freight traveler information type things into the overall program. So as Jen mentioned, this is the contact information for all of us that are working on the project at this time. So if you have any questions specifically for any one of the presenters or for myself, please give us a call or send us an email. And I want to thank you, and Jen will open the floor for questions.